Lebanon's Hezbollah chief says the resistance group will beef up its presence in Syria to fight terrorists, accusing the West and its regional allies of supporting and funding them. Russia says it reserves the right, as of May 25th, to unilaterally strike terrorist organizations and illegal armed groups not part of the Syria ceasefire if they refuse to stop fighting. Iraqi Premier Haider al-Abadi urges restraint and national unity in the face of Daesh terrorists, hours after anti-government protesters stormed Baghdad's Green Zone. Search crews find floating human remains, luggage, and seats from the doomed Egypt airplane, but no trace of the black box yet to determine what caused the aircraft to plunge into the Mediterranean. In the U.S., the National Rifle Association endorses Republican Donald Trump for president, warning gun owners that they should, quote, kiss their guns goodbye if Hillary Clinton is elected. Hi there, this is Top 5 here on Press TV, and I'm Zubin Zarvan. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah has stressed that the recent assassination of one of the movement's top military commanders would neither weaken the resistance nor drive it away from Syria. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah described Mustafa Badreddin as one of the major players in preventing the fall of Syria to terrorists. Our correspondent, Maryam Saleh, reports.
1 week following the assassination of Hezbollah's top military commander, Mustafa Badreddin, the movement secretary general stressed that the killing of the commander or such moves would not push Hezbollah to withdraw from Syria.
We will continue the battle, and we are confident that our efforts, blood, and modest contributions, alongside all the other efforts, will lead to defeating the U.S.-Israeli Takfiri-Saudi scheme. They won't be able to control Syria, its leadership, or its people. An entire project will fall in Syria, and consequently in the entire region.
The Hezbollah leader was speaking at a ceremony to pay tribute to Badreddin. He lauded the commander as a martyr who had a history in fighting the Israeli aggression against Lebanon and dismantling its espionage networks, and lately played an instrumental role in minimizing the Takfiri threat against Lebanon. Although Nasrallah did say the probe into the assassination of Badreddin did not show any proof of Israeli involvement, he accused Tel Aviv of extending a hand to the terrorist groups.
Today I tell the Israelis and Arab hypocrites and the entire world, we reiterate our warning to Israel that we will retaliate if they target not just one of our leaders, but any of our fighters, and our response will be harsh and strong and will go beyond Shabwa Farms.
Nasrallah also called on all those searching for the truth to follow the Western media, which are now openly naming how the war on Syria began and who inflamed it through supporting Takfiri terrorists. Although Hezbollah did declare that the Takfiri militants were responsible for the assassination of top military commander Mustafa Badreddin, they have also stressed that they believe the war against Takfiris is part of a wider confrontation against the project in which the Israelis and Takfiri terrorists find common ground. And now with the assassination of Badreddin, new developments could emerge. Maryam Saleh, Press TV, Beirut.
Russia has reacted to the U.S. refusal to launch joint airstrikes against terrorists in Syria. Moscow says it's prepared to strike terrorists unilaterally if they refuse to lay down their arms. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu has said Moscow reserves the right to eliminate terrorist groups starting May the 25th if they do not adhere to the truce in Syria. This after Washington rejected Moscow's proposal to carry out joint airstrikes against militants. Russia has already carried out many airstrikes on terrorists in Syria upon a request by the Syrian government. Joining us to talk about this is political commentator Paul Antonopoulos. Paul, it's good to have you with us on the program. Now, we understand that the Russians had previously stopped their aerial attacks on the terrorists, including those who were usually referred to by the West as rebels, moderate rebels. What do you think in your mind made the Russians consider the option of resuming those attacks, be it jointly with the Americans or now unilaterally?
Well, the Russian Air Force has taken a three-month break from targeting many terrorist forces in Syria because of the ceasefire agreement that is in place throughout Syria. We know that militants that have signed to the ceasefire are still allied to terrorist groups that are not part of this peace settlement, like Jabhat al-Nusra. Russia's planned resumption of airstrikes will force all militant groups to seriously adhere to the ceasefire agreement or be eliminated. This therefore means that Russia is forcing the militant groups who have continually violated the ceasefire to conform or to be targeted. This can force peace to be administered to select terrorist groups. However, in the case of Jabhat al-Nusra, the only means peace can be achieved is with their total annihilation.
Now, Paul, on top of this, we understand also that the refusal by the Americans in order to cooperate and coordinate actions in defeating and degrading the terrorists on the ground in Syria, along with the Russians, which has been all the more importantly encouraged by Staffan de Mistura, the UN envoy to Syria peace talks as well, does send a major signal and does impact the ongoing peace talks there. What is your appraisal there?
Well, the most important thing that we have to consider is that the USA, just like Turkey, are a part of NATO. So there needs to be more coordination between the United States and Turkey, along with Russia, to deal with this terrorist problem. The most important part that we need to remember about America's ally in Turkey is that they allow aid and military equipment and jihadist forces to freely cross the border into Syria, which only hinders the Syrian government's efforts in fighting terrorist forces, as Turkey just keeps strengthening the anti-government forces. We know that Turkey is willing to pay any price to remove President Assad from power, and this is exactly in line with the United States policy.
And Paul, very briefly, do you think any kind of peace can be achieved in Syria, regardless of the Syrian government's component, which is the essential and main one indeed, but so far as the two brokers of the peace talks are concerned, being America and Russia, do you think any actual peace on the ground can be achieved without proper coordination and cooperation between the two, that is America and Russia?
Of course not. If we've got the Russian side supporting the government and their allies in the United States supporting anti-government forces, no peace can be achieved. Although there we can create ceasefires with certain terrorist groups, as long as the United States is supporting other groups, no peace can be achieved unless there's this continued or attempted coordination.
Okay, Paul, thank you for your thoughts there. Iraqi Premier Haider al-Abadi has called on his country's people to exercise restraint amid the ongoing military operations against Daesh terrorists there. Abadi warned that chaos will not be in their interest. He further urged all Iraqi citizens and political forces to unite in order to confront Daesh. He noted that the government forces are about to fully liberate the city of Fallujah from terrorists. Abadi also lifted a curfew slapped on Baghdad after protesters stormed the capital's fortified Green Zone, where the premises of the Prime Minister's office and parliament are located. Dozens of demonstrators, mostly the supporters of Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, were wounded during clashes with the police. Sadr voiced support for protesters and condemned the use of force by government troops. This is the second security breach at the Green Zone within just 1 month. The protesters are furious over a spike in terror attacks, that is, in Iraq, which they blame on security officials and the government. Sadr's followers have been protesting for weeks now, demanding the government to implement political and economic reforms and combat corruption. We're joined by our correspondent, Altaf Ahmed, on the ground in Baghdad to get some perspective. Altaf, good to have you again on the news program. How about an update first?
Well, according to officials associated with Iraq's health ministry, the number of people affected or who have fallen casualty today in the in what happened today in Baghdad has reached 500, many of whom have sustained injuries. Many others have also been reported as cases of people who face suffocation or shortage of breath and respiratory problems, namely due to the tear gas fired at them by Iraqi security forces. We know that Iraqi forces had fired tear gas as well as live shots in the air, of course, to disperse the crowds, the thousands of pro-reform demonstrators who had stormed into the 10 square kilometer premises here in Baghdad, known as the Green Zone, which is a heavily fortified premises housing or hosting the number of government institution buildings, including parliament, cabinet, as well as a number of UN mission offices and a number of foreign embassies. Now, Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has broken his silence regarding this entire situation. He has called on political rivals to settle political differences, which are obviously contributing to the fragile security here in Iraq. Also, he has called on all political groups as well as the Iraqi people to unite as one solid front in the face of one common enemy, that being the Daesh Takfiri terrorists, who have been wreaking havoc in Iraq since mid-June of 2014. At the same time, he is saying that chaos is obviously not in the best interest of Iraq. And we know that today, or yesterday actually, Friday, May 20th, thousands of pro-reform demonstrators have stormed into Baghdad's Green Zone. Their demand, or they were infuriated, namely due to the surge of terror attacks practiced or recorded against them in their regions, namely such as, for example, Sadr City, east of the Iraqi capital Baghdad, Ash-Sha'b district, northwest of Baghdad as well, a number of districts here in the Iraqi capital. They were obviously infuriated. They are accusing security officials of not fully tightening security or tightening the news on the entrances of the Iraqi capital, and thus preventing the entrance, for example, of explosives rigged cars as well as suicide bombers. Now, a bombshell that was dropped by Mr. Abadi was what you just mentioned regarding the city of Fallujah. Fallujah is the second largest stronghold for Daesh in Iraq. Mr. Abadi said that the Iraqi forces were at the doorsteps of Fallujah. He said that there will be a full liberation of Anbar province, which also, as Fallujah is a part of Anbar province, and then the Iraqi forces would be heading towards Mosul. Now, this is controversial on several levels. Number one, because namely it contests what we have been hearing from American officials, namely Steve Warren, the spokesman for the so-called U.S.-led coalition, which has been battling Daesh here in Iraq, who have been saying, or who has said, that the Iraqi forces could head to Mosul, the capital of the so-called caliphate established by Daesh Takfiri militants between Iraq and Syria, in the northern part of the country, namely in the province of Nineveh, before completely eliminating Daesh from western Iraq, from the province of Anbar, and from the city of Fallujah. And to be honest with you, in the past couple of days, we had been hearing murmurs of a possible announcement of 0 hour for an all-out operation to retake Fallujah. However, seeming how the security situation in the Iraqi capital is quite fragile, we don't know if 0 hour is going to see daylight.
On a separate note, Altaf, and we do understand that the state of disunity, as we're witnessing throughout the ranks and file of the Iraqi people, does have a major negative impact on the fight against terrorism and the attack on Mosul, potentially. But I want to ask you about the backing of the most senior Shiite Iraqi leader, being Ayatollah Sistani. What is Ayatollah Sistani's position and other senior Shiite Iraqi clerics when it comes to the supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr and what they're doing?
Well, it doesn't seem to there is not a direct indication or a direct statement regarding one political group or the other. Obviously, Sayyid Sistani had been trying, or has been urging, all political groups to resolve Tangali issues, to put the best interest of Iraq as their number one goal, or to make that at the top of on the top of their agendas. For weeks now, we've been hearing about the distress and the disheartening feelings that Sayyid Sistani has been having over the entire situation. He has time and again accused some politicians of putting their best interest ahead of the best interest of Iraq, and not working or not being determined suffering from the Iraqi people. This is the situation, or this is the statement of Sayyid Sistani. We know that he doesn't really get too much into politics. However, to be honest with you, there is a certain sense that the surge of terror attacks that we have witnessed recently in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, that did not come out of thin air. There are a lot of talks about foreign meddling, sides which are trying to further infuriate the people against the Iraqi government to cause a deepening of the rift between the two sides, which, as I said,
appreciate your
is not
insightful
the best
commentary, Altaf Ahmed. We're running short on time. Appreciate that. Altaf Ahmed, Press TV's correspondent in Baghdad. But initial reports suggest there were smoke alerts aboard doomed Egypt Air flight MS-804 before it went down in the Mediterranean Sea. U.S. media outlets were reporting the smoke in the cabin after obtaining data from a screen grab from an Egyptian source. However, a U.S. official said it's still too early to confirm the reports. This comes as Egypt's aviation ministry says search teams found human remains believed to belong to those on board the crashed aircraft 290 kilometers north of the city of Alexandria. The plane was en route from Paris to Cairo with some 66 people on board when it crashed into the sea. On Thursday, that is, Egypt says it's more likely that the plane was brought down by a terrorist attack than a technical failure. To update us on the situation, we have Press TV's Constantine Venizelos. Constantine, good to have you again on the news program. Now, what can you tell us in terms of an update on the search and rescue operations currently going on in Greece?
Yes, good morning, Jubin. Of course, naturally, Greek officials are very involved in following this, and so is half the planet's intelligence agencies. If any of our viewers were watching NBC News earlier, they would have seen a senior U.S. intelligence official saying that the U.S. has, because the U.S. has a rather persistent stare, as he called it, in the region, agencies there have in their possession infrared and multispectral images that indicate strongly there was an explosion on Egypt Air MS-804. And of course, the cause remains unclear, said the source on NBC. Of course, over the last 2 hours, Jubin, investigators are looking over a string of messages sent by the plane's aircraft communications addressing and reporting system. And the well-known U.S. aviation expert Bob Mann was also interviewed in the U.S. And says that the data, according to the ACA arrest messages, indicate a number of things, including an explosion. For those who are not familiar with ACA arrest, just a 5 second crash course is a cockpit data link protocol and can be carried over VHF or SATCOM. It's used for many different things, including messaging between aircraft and ground operations, the downloading of flight plans, etc. Now, according to this ACARS messages, there was smoke in the laboratory, there was smoke in avionics, and there was also smoke in the pilot's cabin. And of course, very rarely there is a smoke without fire. Digital media over the last 2 hours are also exploding with armchair speculations as to what this could mean. But there was smoke and there was highly likely fire inside the doomed aircraft. Right.
Constantine, appreciate your thoughts and your commentary there. Indeed, we just have to wait and see what the outcome of these speculations and these investigations would be. A terror attack might be quite probable. Thank you for your thoughts, sir. Let's go to Mohammad Chalabi on the same story. Mohammad Chalabi, Press TV's correspondent in Cairo. Mohammad, good to have you with us on the program. Now, what can you tell us about the, let's say, reception, the mournful and deplorable reception of the story over there in Cairo? And we understand there have been a lot of ceremonies, mourning ceremonies held in the area, both in Cairo and other cities. What can you tell us more about that?
Yes, Jubin, Egyptians are still shocked at the scale of the tragedy. Again, another tragedy involving Egypt's air or Egypt's airspace, and mourning the victims, praying for the for the victims, and of course hoping that this will not affect the tourism industry in Egypt that has been already devastated by the Sharm el Sheikh flight terror attack against the Russian metro jet that was downed over the Sinai Peninsula in late October. Now, the search operations led by the Egyptian Air Forces and the Navy are continuing in the area where the plane fell. We did not say, of course, rescue, because chances of survivors obviously tend to zero. Egypt Air and the presidency have already issued condolences to the families of the victims and acknowledgement, a natural acknowledgement, of course, that there are no chance of the survivors, unfortunately. More human remains, body parts, seats, luggage and belongings of the victims are being found, and Egypt Air says that there is an advancement in the location of bigger pieces of wreckage. Of course, the search now is for the black boxes. Head of Egypt Air, Hisham Nahas, said that there is no advancement in that regard, but that there is advancement in locating bigger pieces of wreckage. And the hope now is to find these black boxes that has the recordings, the data also for the altitude, for the speed, and that could tell us a lot, because a lot of theories
that
are ongoing.
That could reveal a lot about the details. Mohammed, sorry to jump there. You know that we're quite short in time. But what I want to ask you very briefly in 30 seconds, if possible, is that we heard some unsubstantiated report coming out earlier that Daesh, ISIL, have in a way assumed responsibility for downing this plane. Do you confirm that?
It's not credible at all. There's no authenticity to that report. Yes, we did hear it from yesterday. There is no, it's not authentic. It was unlike the one that claimed the downing of the Russian metro jet over the Sinai Peninsula. We cannot confirm that. It's not authentic at all.
It's not confirmed as yet. Thank you so much, Mohammed Chalabi, Press TV's correspondent in Cairo. U.S. Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump has praised the U.S. National Rifle Association, the NRA, after he was endorsed by the pro-gun lobby.
To get the endorsement, believe me, is a fantastic honor. And I just said to Wayne and I just said to Chris, I will not let you down. Remember that. I will not let you down.
They walked in. During a speech at the NRA convention in the state of Kentucky, Trump pledged to serve the association, quote, well. He also criticized Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton as, quote, heartless, saying she wants to disarm vulnerable Americans in high crime neighborhoods.
Hillary wants to disarm vulnerable Americans in high crime neighborhoods. Whether it's a young single mom in Florida or a grandmother in Ohio, Hillary wants them to be defenseless, wants to take away any chance they have of survival. It's going to be a very unfair situation. And that's why we're going to call her Heartless Hillary. We can do without that. I like Crooked Hillary better.
Trump also said Clinton wants to abolish the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment, which guarantees the right to bear arms. The head of the NRA also warned Americans against voting for Clinton, saying they will need to, quote, kiss their guns goodbye if she is elected. This comes as the U.S. is gripped by a surge in gun-related deaths. Last year, Obama introduced measures to expand background checks for gun purchases in a bid to fight rampant gun violence. His action has been met with criticism from some lawmakers and powerful gun advocacy groups, including the NRA. With us to talk about this is former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel. Mr. Gravel, it's good to have you with us on the news program. In your opinion, how significant is this endorsement for Donald Trump and the Republicans?
I don't think it's that significant. It's a given that they would get the endorsement from the NRA. That's been their constituency. And so I don't think there's anything new of it. I think Trump blows up any kind of endorsement because it makes him appear like he's an ordinary political candidate. But no, it's not that significant. And of course, it's greatly exaggerated what would take place with respect to Hillary Clinton once elected. There's no question she would not be disarming all these people that they pretend would be the case.
And speaking of Hillary Clinton and of the way that she was portrayed and her policies, we understand that gun control was at the center and at the heart of her campaign. Now, how do you assess and evaluate the wording of Mr. Trump in picturing Hillary's position?
Well, first off, I don't think that the gun control was the center of Hillary's campaign. She has taken the same position as mainstream America has on this subject, but I don't think she's been any more extreme. And the representations that she will do away with the Second Amendment are just preposterous. But they can make those charges. And of course, it's so typically Trump, he'll say anything of any nature and not hold himself accountable to it. And the public doesn't hold himself accountable to it at this point in time. But I think as the campaign moves forward, you're going to see a tightening of accountability in the rhetoric that takes place. Certainly, I am not pro-Hillary, not at all, and nor am I pro-Trump. But I would hope that that we would be able to include in the debates, the forthcoming debates, the Green Party candidates and the Libertarian Party candidates, who are very legitimate and would add a great deal of information to the American people and give a possibility of a broader choice than we're facing today.
Mike Revolt, thank you for your thoughts there.
Thank you.
And that's all for this edition of Top 5 here on Press TV. Thank you for watching us. Up next in about 3 minutes, a recap of the hour's top stories. Stay with us.